This episode is presented by The Green Grape.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and we're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, January 30th, 2019. This is the 203rd episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is the founder of a membership club for hospitality enthusiasts, and I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start out with my PR tip. And then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to believe that everything will work out no matter what the circumstance. Know that there is a solution to every problem. Be a glass half full person rather than half empty, and always keep a positive attitude. When the unexpected comes your way, and you know it will, don't fret. Instead, think optimistically and don't worry about a thing, because every little thing is going to be all right, as Mr. Bob Marley has said. That is my tip today. Now, for my regular listeners, I had announced last week that Chef J.J. Johnson was going to be on the show today. He had to reschedule, and stay tuned for that when we get a new date. But instead, I have a new fabulous guest here with me in the studio. It is Benji Leibowitz. He is the founder of InHouse, a membership club for people who care about restaurants. Born and raised in London, Benji's hospitality career began in New York City in 2009 and includes working at the Nomad, initially as the head maitre d', before being promoted to director of guest relations. Inspired by his personal desire to link and extend hospitality to an appreciative audience, InHouse was born in 2015 and became a full-time endeavor in 2016. So welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome. I'm excited to hear all about InHouse. And as you noted right before the show, we are doing back-to-back Englishmen guest episodes.
I know. I'm very proud to be following Simon from last week.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Fantastic.
That's cool. Yeah. So let's start out with your background a bit. You're from London, and what was your childhood like? Were you interested in restaurants back then?
No, I kind of fell into the hospitality industry.
Okay.
I think quite a few quite a few of us did.
Like me.
Yeah, like you, and I think Simon mentioned last week as well.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in London, first generation English. My mother's Italian. My father's South African.
Oh, wow.
And slightly different English experience. My childhood was salami and coffee, not tea and crumpets. So a slightly different sort of experience growing up there. And we were always really encouraged to travel and explore different cultures, different cuisines. And, you know, ultimately ended up moving out here, which was really fun 10 years ago. And I haven't looked back since.
So you're just drawn into the New York City lifestyle and restaurant scene, I guess.
Yeah. So I initially came out here looking to work in nonprofits.
Okay.
And I came out here and I picked up a restaurant job on the side to make a little bit of extra cash. And that restaurant was a restaurant called Faustina, which was a Scott Conant restaurant. I don't know if you remember it.
I do. I saw that in a longer bio of yours and I was thinking back about it. And I've always been a Scott fan. He's a great
really
chef, restaurateur, nice guy.
No, and it was a really exciting time, and that was in 2009.
Okay.
And the general manager of the project was Jeff Tascarella, who had helped Scott open up Scarpetta initially on 14th Street. And Jeff was the guy who really sort of helped me understand that there was an opportunity to build a career in the industry, not just have a part-time job. And from that point onwards, I was sort of hooked. and I followed Jeff onto Nomad, and the rest is history.
Right. Well, listeners, you can go back. I had Jeff on my show a while ago.
Did you really?
Yes.
Gosh.
Yeah, before, well, now, is he's in Los Angeles or is he in Las Vegas?
He's between the two. I just saw him two weeks ago in LA, but his family is based in Vegas at the moment. And he's overseeing both those properties because Nomad obviously opened
right.
up there last year.
I did do a show with Jeff. It was great. He's fantastic.
Really
I could see
guy.
Why you would follow him there. And yeah, it made me think back when I lived in Chicago before New York, and I worked in restaurants, and I was a server at Charlie Trotter's.
Oh wow!
And that was like the high end, very intense.
Yeah.
Front of the house experience that I have. But I remember it kind of became clear from that job that either you become a lifer and someone who works in restaurants and that's something you do, or maybe it's a side job and then you maybe move on and do other things.
Right.
So when you just said that, just kind of that was your moment where you're sort of like, I can do this as a career.
Right. And I think what's become really interesting, what we're starting to see a little bit, is that now there are so many other opportunities of other things that are happening in the space for people who are passionate about hospitality, mm-hmm. but have other interests, whether it's media and people doing podcasts and getting involved in food journalism, whether it's tech and hospitality, and you've seen, you know, a huge rise of different companies in that regard. And there's a different professionalization. I think there are now different opportunities for people who do want to commit their careers to being involved in the hospitality industry, but maybe want to move on past, you know, working on the floor of a restaurant.
Yeah, absolutely true. And that's perfect segue into what you're doing now.
Yeah.
So how did you come up with this idea for in-house?
So the whole thing came together fairly organically while I was at Nomad. I wasn't trying to start a business.
Right.
And Jeff Tascarella was there right at the beginning with me. And of course, Will Godara, who owns and runs Nomad in Leamington Park.
Right.
And really what happened was I was there as director of guest relations. And what that meant was really thinking about guest experience and guest relations across the 1,000+ people that were coming through the restaurant every day. Between breakfast, lunch, dinner, and the bars and events, it was a pretty busy property. And, you know, we were fortunate to be a big, busy New York restaurant. But I think, you know, most restaurateurs will tell you that regulars are really the lifeblood of their business. And that was something that I wanted to try and think about a little bit more strategically. And so we put together a pilot program with Jeff and Will's blessing and a little bit of their advice. And we put together a group of 13 restaurants in the beginning from across New York, some more fine dining, some a little bit more casual, but all restaurants that were kind of like-minded in their hospitality approach. And in the beginning, it was restaurants like Blue Hill and Casamono. Charlie Bird, I think, was there in the beginning, The Modern.
A
great list. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Fedora was there back in the beginning, Gabe's restaurants, of course. And all restaurants that, you know, were interested in collaborating and communicating around guest experience and around hospitality. And we asked each restaurant to invite 5 of their favorite regulars into this program. It wasn't their biggest spenders. It wasn't their most frequent guests. It wasn't their investors. It was people who were real supporters and ambassadors for their restaurants. And we built a reciprocity network across the maitre d's at those restaurants and those great regulars. And we just wanted to try and see if we could put together a small pilot program in the industry. And immediately every restaurant started seeing new repeat guests, which was really exciting.
So I'm thinking in my head, you said 13 restaurants, 5 each. What's mm-hmm. that, like
65?
60? Okay,
yeah.
65. And what did those 65 people, what did they get? They got reservations at the other restaurants? They got introductions to?
So it was very manual in the beginning.
Okay.
And we called it sort of a little reciprocity network. And the idea was to try and honor the relationship that people had built at one place across this small network. And so part of that was helping with discovery and access. So absolutely, if you're an amazing longtime regular of Fedora and you want to come visit Nomad, we were really excited to try and welcome you into the restaurant. And then there was also trying to make introductions between the teams. So if you knew the general manager and the bartender and the owner and the chef and so on at one restaurant, we wanted to help introduce you to some of their counterparts at other restaurants. our members have always been people who really care about the people behind the places as much as their actual dining experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that we were really keen to foster. And then we would also share some dining profile information, because if you're looking at these kinds of restaurants and the way in which they think about guest experience, it's really helpful to know that, you know, someone really loves Riesling, or someone, you know, has a real sweet tooth or prefers to sit in a corner table. And we were able to sort of take from some of the relationships that had been built and some of the experiences that were catered to at one place and translate that across the city, which was quite exciting.
That's very cool. So when you say we, well, we'll talk about it if you have a team now, how you've grown. But back at the beginning, were you the one doing these introductions? It was very hands-on.
It was me on an iPhone while I was still sort of running my team at Nomad. And, you know, again, I hadn't really thought past that at that point. And then it got to a point where we started to grow kind of organically. We were very fortunate that, you know, other restaurants heard what we were up to and were kind of interested in what we were doing. And before I knew it, we were working with a group of 30 restaurants. And then a colleague of mine on our management team at Nomad joined me as my business partner, Nick Michel. And we decided, hang on, there might actually be something more exciting here. And so we left in 2016, raised some seed funding, and put together a slightly more comprehensive program. And you said it already. Today we say we're a membership club for people who care about restaurants. And so what we've done since is really pull together leading industry professionals and a curated group of great regulars and dining enthusiasts. And we've pulled together this really fantastic community of like-minded people who share a similar interest and passion for hospitality. And through bookings and through events and through content, we're looking to try and provide an opportunity for that community to engage and interact. Currently, we're working with over 60 restaurants now across New York and London, and hopefully soon some other markets as well.
Excellent. Okay, so let's take a little break here, and then we're going to come back and hear more about all the exciting things you're doing with in-house. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
This episode is presented by The Green Grape, a family of three businesses on Fulton Street committed to supporting small-scale farms, celebrating seasonality, and delighting our customers. Order local, pasture-raised meats and cheeses to pair with our selection of fine wines and spirits, and we'll deliver it to your door at no extra charge. From great local gifts to providing you all you need for a delicious meal, The Green Grape offers truly special and hard-to-find products created by New York's community of local makers. Support independent grocers and our site to learn more. Visit greengrape.com. That's green with an E. GREENEGRAPE.com.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Benji Leibowitz. He's the founder of In-House, which is a membership club for people who care about restaurants. So let's talk a little about your membership and what's the process to becoming a member, because I will share this with you. I don't know if you know this, but you probably do because you are that hospitality guy. I looked back on my email, January 2018, I have an email from you about membership, about how you can possibly become a member, because somehow I was on a list, of your lists. And I don't know, I did not become a member and apply, and it didn't move forward for me, but I always find I don't know if I'm your membership type, because even though I'm totally industry, I eat out constantly, I travel for restaurants, but that's the thing, I just go myself. So I don't know. So who are your members, and should I be a member?
Well, yes.
You're going to say yes, of course.
Of course we need to bring you in-house.
I love that. But, bring me in-house. Yeah. There's the name.
But there's a couple of different ways we think about membership. So historically, you know, membership was by invitation from a management team at one of our restaurant partners. And we've since opened that up a little bit. So we now have an application form online, and membership is now either by invitation still through the management team at a restaurant, or application online. And as part of your application online, we do ask for a restaurant sponsor. And there we will look to get a written reference from a manager or owner at a restaurant, either in New York or if you're a traveling member from a different city, in order to try and make sure that we're curating an audience of members who have already proven that they're invested in building relationships in the industry. We also offer honorary membership to anyone in a management position or corporate position or ownership position within our restaurant partners. And so that's our way of really making sure that we're involving leading industry professionals. Where we've struggled is how do we bring in people like yourself who are doing really interesting things, who are promoting hospitality, who are in the media space or the cultural space or the consultancy space. And that's something that we're still exploring. But we do have a tier of membership that we call our Cultural Ambassador Program.
Ooh.
And that's, yeah, and I think that has your name all over it. So, you know, that's our way of trying to bring in people who we think are doing really exciting things in the space or might even be doing exciting things in other cultural industries and disciplines that we're keen to sort of bring in to help us sort of grow a diversity within the membership base.
Right. So what you have a few different types of membership?
Yeah. So we have our core membership, which is our hospitalitarian membership, which is for people living in New York or London. We then have a traveler membership for people who are living outside of New York and London, but who might find themselves in the cities and, you know, available to make the most of our bookings platform and come to our events. And then we have this Cultural Ambassador Program as well, which is our way of sort of, you'll learn about that soon when you join us.
Fabulous. We'll talk more about that later. So you have your first public event coming up, correct? Called Home Away From Home.
Yeah.
So tell me about that.
So this is an event that we're really excited about because firstly, it's our first ever public event. We host events monthly and sometimes more frequently for our members and for our industry. And that includes dinners and wine tastings and speakers and pre-opening tours of restaurants and all sorts of fun things happening in the hospitality space. But we're really keen to sort of be able to welcome in a larger audience. And this one is bringing over the Barbary team from London, which is a fantastic restaurant team that we're proud to work with in London. They also own the Palomar restaurant and Evelyn's Table in London.
I've been to the Palomar.
You've been to the Palomar. Yes, it's delicious, right?
I'm proud. Yes, it's delicious and it's great. I was solo and it's a great restaurant for solo dining because
they've got that fantastic kitchen counter. Yeah.
I was in London a year and a half ago and I found there were a lot of restaurants that had these kitchen type bar counters, which I love and are so welcoming to anyone, but especially when you're solo, it's
absolutely
just the best place to sit.
Yeah, well, you'll love the Barbary on your next visit.
Okay, my next trip, yeah.
Because the Barbary is counter seating only. They've got this beautiful horseshoe bar. It kind of looks a little bit like Maison Premier's kind of horseshoe bar, but with a kitchen in the middle instead of a bar.
Oh, nice.
And so, you know, we're good friends with that team and we're proud to work with them in London. And for a while now, I've been really wanting to bring out one of the restaurant teams that we're working with in London to do a collaborative pop-up with a team out here. And so they'll be joining us next week, Tuesday, February 5th and Wednesday, February 6th at Fedora. And we're doing a collaborative event with Gabe Stallman and his team there, which should be a lot of fun. And we just opened up a couple of last minute tables on the later side that I think are still available on Resi. So for anyone listening out there, we'd love for you to join us.
Great. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. You know, from everything I know about it.
I haven't.
And I'm so due to go back to Fedora, too. I haven't been there recently. But he has such a great restaurant group here.
Yeah, no. And those guys really, I think, speak to a style of hospitality that's so authentic and warm and welcoming. We're very proud to work with those guys and those teams.
Yeah. So when you say we...
Yeah.
How big is your team now? Is it just two people or?
It's small, but it's growing. There's five of us.
All right.
And we're in the process of hiring both in New York and now as we begin to set our sights on the West Coast and also expanding in London, we're going to be hiring some teams there. So again, if there's anyone listening who's interested in what we're doing, then please do get in touch.
Well, that's very cool. So I saw that you just secured a $2 million investment. That was some big press release went out on that.
Yeah.
So what's next? And how did, were you seeking, obviously, were you, you were seeking some sort of capital to support your next steps.
Yeah, I think, you know, at some level, you're always looking for interesting strategic partnerships. Mm-hmm. And funding that makes sense. And we feel very fortunate to have found a group of investors in this last round who are really excited about helping us expand what we've been working on in New York and again a little bit in London and opening that up on a larger scale. And what started as this little reciprocity program amongst maitre d's and has since graduated into this membership club bringing together industry professionals and dining enthusiasts, we're keen to now take one step further and build a contemporary global restaurant network, pulling together really dynamic industry teams and really dynamic interested hospitality enthusiasts. And we're going to be sort of expanding our events program in different markets. We're doing some fun things on the booking side that we've got planned. And then we're keen to do a little bit of content as well. I don't think podcasts anytime soon. but we're really excited to build a platform for people to engage in and for people to feel like they're at the forefront of what's happening in the hospitality space in different markets around the world.
So can you say what your next market may be or what part
absolutely,
of the world?
Absolutely, yeah. So San Francisco will be our next market in the US. And then most likely,
it's great city.
Yeah,
it's great
fantastic.
Food city. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were just out there 2 weeks ago in LA and SF and doing a little bit of R&D. And I think SF will come on first and then LA. I'm really excited about Chicago, which I know you started your hospitality career.
Yeah, Chicago has an amazing dining scene. I'm thinking those people today because it's extremely cold there today.
Yeah, yeah.
We're getting a snowstorm here all of a sudden in Bushwick, but
they've
Chicago.
They've got something else.
I don't think. I mean, I don't know if what's happening with restaurants, particularly there today, because it's so cold. You know, I saw a few people did comment. I saw on Twitter they weren't going to be open, but anyways, yeah, Chicago's a terrific dining scene and. And more so than when I lived there, it was a little more limited.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
No, I think they've done some really exciting things over the last few years, and there's also a really great industry community out there, and that's something that's really important to us, is finding ways to support and champion these industry communities in these different cities. And I think you know only too well that in New York there's a real strong sort of beating heart in the hospitality industry, and it's been really exciting for us to be able to play our part in that.
Yeah, definitely. Do you find that it's the same that way in London? Like, how do you compare London to New York?
I think every city has slightly different dynamics, and with London, what's interesting is most of the restaurant teams that we're working there, most of the concepts that kind of at the forefront that are more exciting tend to be younger restaurateur chef owner teams. Out here, particularly in New York at the moment, I think that the big groups continue to really own the stage. And of course, there are some smaller operators who are doing some really exciting things. But even there, you're seeing, you know, what started off as just Charlie Bird, you know, now the team have three restaurants. Mm-hmm. What started off as just Lilia, now they have two restaurants. What started off as Estella, now they have three restaurants. And so even those teams are sort of growing at quite a pace. In London, you're still seeing some really young entrepreneurial teams. And that's really exciting, and it's fun to be able to support those teams. But there's also sort of not quite the same maturity in some ways on the business side, I think. And I think London's a slightly tougher market on the restaurant side than New York. When our friends come over, our industry friends come over from London, they're shocked that restaurants get a 5:30 and a 10:30 seating in New York, because that's not really quite something that London gets. I think London's doing some really exciting things, just like I think LA at the moment is a really exciting scene.
I completely agree. Yeah, really. I need to get back to both.
Right, yeah.
It's like, I mean, I was in Los Angeles about a little over a year ago too, and it's so much has changed and happened since then, and it seems so long ago even though it wasn't, and I need to get back because there's so many exciting places I want to check out.
Well, I hadn't been in forever, and yeah. I found the scene there really interesting as well, because again, I think in some ways that there are more cutting-edge concepts in LA than you'll find in New York or San Francisco at the moment. They really seem to be doing some interesting things, both in terms of the size of the restaurants, the menus that are coming out, and yet in some ways the industry is not quite as close-knit, and part of that I think is a geographic challenge, which is, you know, in New York, if you run a restaurant, you know, maybe when you're closing up on your way home, you stop in and say hi to your friends down the street who also have a restaurant. Mm-hmm. Or you might go meet a friend, you know, for a post-shift drink. When your restaurant's a 20-minute Uber apart, you know, and
right.
in LA, it's tough to get to see people as much. And so I'm really interested to see how we're going to, you know, we've started thinking about how we're going to approach that. Because I think, you know, there's absolutely an appetite from the industry out there to be better connected and to find opportunities for collaboration. And whether that's through supporting each other's staff, supporting each other's regulars, collaborating around events, the appetite's there. But it's a different market.
Yeah,
it's a different challenge.
Things are spread out. I grew up in Miami, the same thing. You get your car to drive to the restaurant that's 20 minutes from another restaurant you may want to go to. You know, it's not like New York. It's not like London. London's, I find, very easy to walk around and kind of get different neighborhoods depending on where you are. But I think it has a similarity to New York.
Yeah. But what I think is really underlying it all is I think there's this pervasive notion of a dining culture that has really come out over the last few years. And I think back even sort of 5-10 years ago, the way that people used to travel, whether it was you're going to London, you're going to LA, used to be, which museums are you going to, or which galleries are you going to? And now, whether you work in the industry or not, right. It's where you're eating and where you're drinking, right? And we often sort of draw that parallel in terms of thinking about what we're really excited about and this notion of dining culture. And I think if you care about art and you live in New York, you might be a friend of MoMA. And that's part of your cultural identity in the city. It might be part of your social calendar. Mm-hmm. It's a way to meet fellow art lovers. Maybe you go and hear a curator give a talk. And it's a way of contributing back to a cultural institution that you care about. And I think for us, we believe that there are people working in the industry and also people who really care about the industry and want to be involved in the industry. Mm-hmm. And if you want to explore great dining experiences, meet the people behind the places, meet some fellow dining enthusiasts or cocktail nerds, get involved and participate in an engaging way and support those teams, then we'd like to invite you to be in-house. So
yeah.
That's one way that sort of we think. And I think that exists in LA, London, New York, Copenhagen, and so on.
Yeah, I can see that. Is your membership of a certain age group or more heavily male than female, or is it... Is it? I mean, what's your?
Yeah, so we've got members in the 20s and members in the 80s, okay. And everything in between. But I'd say our core membership group is sort of 35 to 50.
Okay.
We've been quite disciplined about making sure that we do have equal representation, male, female, and also across industries as well. I was very nervous that it was going to skew finance heavy. But I think if you look at our membership base, it's a microcosm of New York. We have people in media, people in fashion, people in finance, people in publishing, and everything in between. And what's really fun is when we do these events, and you know, like we're doing next week, everyone gets in the room and immediately has this shared interest and passion. And it's a little bit, it reminds me of sort of an alumni weekend for a college or a school. It doesn't matter what year you graduated, mm-hmm. Everyone sort of has something in common, is excited to sort of talk about these shared experiences.
Well, fantastic. I'm very happy for you and everything that you came up with this idea, and
you've
taken it far, and sounds like it's going further. So
thanks very much.
We'll have to stay tuned for what's more to come. Okay, so let's take a little break here, and we're going to come back and we'll play my speedrun game and we'll talk some industry news. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Hey, are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Kathy Irway, and I'm the host of Eat Your Words here on HRN. Every week, I sit down with food writers to talk about their newest work, from colorful cookbooks to food memoirs to exposés on the food industry. It's all meaty topic for discussion. You can find Eat Your Words wherever you listen to podcasts, and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Benji Leibowitz, and it's time for my speed round game. So what this is I name a few things, and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Okay.
Test one.
Great.
Okay, so here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat out.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Right now, cocktail.
How about tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Definitely large plates, so you can share.
Communal table or chef's counter?
That's a tough one. I enjoy both, but it's tough to pass up a chef's counter.
Yeah. That's always my draw, the chef's counter. Okay, a few more. Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
I'm a big fan of hospitality included as a concept. It continues to have its challenges, but you know, I also come from the European tradition where there's less of a tipping culture, so I'll throw my hat in all included.
Okay, when you started, I thought you were going to go the other way. How about the Nomad Masquerade or EMP Derby Party, which I don't think they're doing anymore?
Yeah, I'm going to have to stand by my former team at Nomad and say Nomad Masquerade. Have you been?
I've been once.
Yeah, it's quite a party.
It's unbelievable the amount of details that go on into any event that the Nomad team does.
You want to know the most impressive thing about the Nomad Masquerade is that they still, from the first year we did it all the way through, and I was there for three of them, we still serve breakfast for hotel guests the next morning at 7 a.m. So there's a team that works through the night to turn the entire restaurant back. And you saw what it looks like at 4 a.m., right? There's a team that comes in that is high-fiving the breakfast team as they're coming in at 6:30 to get ready for 7 a.m.
People who are there probably do not realize or forget that you're in a hotel, even though you know you're in a hotel.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to go back again, and it's quite a party.
Yeah.
Quite a party. Okay, how about a night out for live music or a night out for comedy?
Comedy.
Comedy guy. Cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate, every time.
Manhattan, Brooklyn, or London?
Manhattan.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the game. You're quick. You played a good game.
Thank you. I'm very happy with my answers.
Good. Because I say you could change them, but nah, you can't change them.
I'm happy.
All right, he's happy with them. Yeah. Okay, so industry news. I picked out an article on Bloomberg. It's titled, "Want to Try the Most Exciting Food in America? Leave New York City." Smaller cities like Philadelphia, Indianapolis, and Asheville are where the culinary heat is right now. Here's what you need to know. And this is by Kate Crater and Margaret Sutherland. So I love Kate. I'm a big fan of hers and everything she says, and she knows her stuff. I feel, you know, it's true. There's so much happening in other smaller cities and markets, and she knows how to pick them. I mean, on her list, she has Indianapolis. I know she's been talking about this place, Milktooth, for a while. It's like, Indianapolis wasn't a place. So, you know, totally on my radar. And then you start hearing about these amazing restaurants and things happening there. So I think, you know, yeah, there's a lot happening in these cities that I find, though, New York City, though, by volume, I always think you can't compete with us because we have, you can't possibly eat your way through New York. I try.
Yeah, no, it's just the landscape's changing constantly. And there's still so many amazing classics that you can't even find time to get around.
Exactly.
But I think it's really interesting, this idea. I also thought it was a great piece and a really interesting look at what is happening in what Kate sort of referred to as second cities.
Yes.
And as it happens, one of my best meals of last year was at a restaurant that she highlighted in Asheville, a restaurant called Kurete, which was, and we sat at the chef's counter there, which was fantastic. And it really did feel like that was a restaurant that would be difficult to imagine in New York. And so, you know, I haven't eaten in Indianapolis. I haven't been to Indianapolis, and I haven't been to Minneapolis, and I haven't been to some of these other cities. But I think, you know, they are finding ways to build their own versions of dining culture, their own original concepts, in a really exciting way. And I think there's now an appetite from people living in those cities to allow chefs to be more adventurous than perhaps in the past.
Absolutely.
Which is really exciting.
What made that restaurant, what made you feel that way, that you couldn't see that restaurant in New York, or that just there was something about its local, that, I don't know, its feel?
Yeah, there was, first of all, just the setup of the restaurant. Uh-huh. It was, it's funny, actually, it was quite a small restaurant, but they bought the space next door and sort of expanded. But it felt just so distinct, and it felt, it's not local cuisine, but it just, maybe part of it was the local hospitality, maybe it was just the pace of the mm-hmm. dining room felt less frenetic than New York, which is kind of a, you know, right. something that you always feel when you're in a New York restaurant, which is exciting, but it just felt right in that time and place. And I felt very happy to have found it.
Yeah, well, I've never been to Asheville. Also on her list, she had San Antonio. Never been yeah. there. Minneapolis. I've been talking for probably 5 years about how I have to get to Minneapolis.
To go visit Kevin Kaysen and, yes. and his team. Yeah.
Yes. And I mean, he has, I think he's opening a third place, but there was even what High was on Esquire's best new restaurant list. Like there's lots of other things happening there. I don't want to go right now. Well, it's so cold, right. but maybe this summer I can swing a trip there. And also she mentioned Philadelphia, which I'm excited. I'm going to be going to, they have a Philly chef conference in the beginning of March. I'm going to be going to that. And I'm super excited because there's so many restaurants in Philadelphia that are new and I haven't been to. She named this place Soraya, which I've heard incredible things yeah. about. So yeah, these smaller cities or secondary cities, whatever, they definitely have a lot going on.
Yeah. No, and I think the Gavin Kaysen model is a really interesting model because, you know, he mm-hmm. was in New York for so long and, you know, had such a strong following here. And then he wanted to go home and he brought that back and he's helped, I think, elevate the entire city in terms of, you know, really what they're putting out now. And he's put it on the map in a really exciting way. And I think you're going to start to see more of that already. You know, we hear from people that we work with in the industry of people saying, you know what, they get to a certain point in their life, maybe they're starting to have a family, maybe they, you know, they're looking for a different pace of life, but they want to stay in the hospitality industry and they want to take back what they learned at Jean Georges or what they learned at Union Square Hospitality Group and so on to Austin or San Antonio or yeah. Philadelphia or wherever it might be. And it's great for everyone.
Absolutely. It has been happening and I don't want to call it a trend, but maybe it's a movement or it's something that's been, there are chefs that are going home and bringing everything they know with them and
right.
Exciting things happening. And speaking of Gavin Kaysen, so I saw a couple hours ago, it's a Bocuse d'Or competition is yeah. happening in Lyon. And I go onto Instagram, they have the Instagram Live going. So I saw them announce the winner and Denmark took first place this year.
Oh, really?
So Denmark took first, Sweden took silver, and Norway took bronze. So Scandinavia did very well.
Yeah.
And the U.S. didn't place this year, but they've,
well, that's a
you
shame.
Know.
But they did so well last year. So.
Yeah, the past, they really have. And it's just exciting. It's such a, it's an exciting competition to be a part of it. And it's very impressive what, I mean, Gavin's was...
has been so involved, yeah. you know, for such a long time. I'm sure he was, I'm sure he's
I'm
there.
Sure he's there. Yeah, yeah he is yeah. there. Yeah. I feel like 1 year I want to go out for it. I've been yeah. to Lyon once. That was a different trip. I'm like putting things together. It was like when I had a London trip. No, I went to Paris 1 year and I also went to Lyon. And it's such a charming city. Yeah. But I'd like to, it would be, it seems like it's like, it is the Olympics, some energy, and I think it would be really fun to be a part of it.
Yeah, and what's amazing is that they partner these hugely acclaimed chefs, so they'll bring in, you know, Gavin and Thomas Keller, of course, very involved on the US team, and then every country has their team and these sort of very prominent chefs. And then they bring in these, you know, real emerging talent, young guys. And I think every team, it's mandatory that they have someone on the team who's sort of under 21 or something, who's, you know, just a real talent in the kitchen. And it's an amazing opportunity. We know a few people who've gone through it. And it just gives them, you know, really opens everything up for them in their careers.
No, absolutely. And I hope I don't get this wrong, but Karen Goodlad, who's a professor at Brooklyn City Tech, who their hospitality program, she came on my show, and she's a friend. And she, a student of hers, has been a part of this team. And I think she is that young representative that you're talking about that has been working on this for the past year or so.
Yeah.
So,
no, it's a real commitment.
Yeah. And I can't imagine what it's like to be such a young chef, and then you're working with Thomas Keller and Daniel Ballou, and you've probably got to get your act together.
Yeah.
Don't be intimidated, but it's probably an amazing experience. So,
yeah.
Okay, so we're going to take one more break. We'll come back. I'll do my solo dining experience, and then we'll have the final question. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. To All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience. This week, it's at Call Your Mother Deli. Here's the rundown. The location, 3301 Georgia Avenue Northwest, Parkview, Washington, D.C. The concept, a Jew-ish deli. And they also say Boca meets Brooklyn. The owner, Andrew Dana, and the chef, Daniela Moreira. So why did I go? Well, I was out in D.C. a couple weeks ago, and I love bagels and lox, and heard this place was great. So my experience. On a Friday afternoon, I went for a late breakfast, and it was good timing. It was pretty full, but there wasn't a line to order until after I ordered. All of a sudden, there was all these people behind me. So you order at a counter, and you get a number, and I had gotten some coffee, so I sat down. They have these fun rocking chairs by the window and big counter too. So it was kind of fun sitting in a rocking chair. I had my bagel, I had my coffee, it was great. So what did I get? So they have a bunch of signature sandwiches, but what I wanted and what I got was I wanted cream cheese and salmon, and I had veggie toppings, and I tried their za'atar bagel, which is something I don't know if I've ever had a za'atar bagel, but it was great. It's kind of like an everything bagel, but more emphasis on the za'atar spice. And I had my coffee. So my take, great food combo, as I knew. It was a delicious bagel. They've styled their bagels. It's supposed to be the chew of a New York bagel and the sweetness of a Montreal dough. So that's their style. And the ambiance, it's very happy. They have lots of pastel colors and fine signage. And they have a massive hot pink Mara Forni brick oven is the centerpiece. And it kind of felt a bit kitschy and homey, and these rocking chairs, and it's really fun. They also have a big communal table smack in the middle of the space, and it's square. So I don't know. There were lots of people sitting around having breakfast, and it just had a good vibe. So I'd say it's perfect for bagel lovers. Interesting tidbit, the owners also run Timber Pizza Company, which is a popular pizza place in D.C. Personal fun fact. So when I was ordering, I noticed they have a display counter next to the register where they're also selling some products. And I saw the Matzah Project on there, which is my childhood friend, camp friend, Ashley Albert's matzah company. And she also was a guest on my show. So I just thought it was cool to see that they had that as something they were selling. So the cost of my bagel with my coffee was $14. That's including everything, tax and gratuity. Would I go back? Yes, I would. I've heard they had great babka, and I really should have gotten that, but I didn't. So next time, I'll get the babka. Their website is callyourmotherdeli.com. There you go. Are you a bagel person?
This place sounds great. I live near Russendorters.
Lucky you.
So I've definitely learned to become a bagel person.
It's not as much of a London English thing, right?
They don't do it in the UK as much, but I love a bagel with lox. And that sounds like a really interesting place. Are they open in the evenings as well, or was it just more of a daytime?
It's just daytime. I think they close. I think it's breakfast until about 2 p.m.
Okay.
Or maybe 3, but it was 2 or 3.
And did it feel like most people were getting to take out, or most people were sort of staying in the space?
It was a mix, but I feel like more people were staying.
Yeah. Well, I think have you been to the Russendorters sit down cafe?
I have.
Yeah. You know, it was amazing that it took them, you know, 4 generations before they opened it. But I think that's really, you know, changed everything.
And it really has.
It's a really fun way to enjoy Russendorters.
And I met someone for breakfast there, like a business meeting, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago. We met right at 9 o'clock when they opened, and there was a line.
Yeah.
And it was like a Tuesday. We almost didn't get in.
Yeah. It fills up very quick.
It was impressive. Impressive.
Yeah. And they do well.
Okay, so let's do the final question. So next week, my guest is Mark Rosati. He is the culinary director at Shake Shack, and he travels so much more than me, and people on the show know I travel a lot. He's on the plane constantly, and he's opening Shake Shacks around the world. So what would you like to ask Mark? I don't know if you know him.
I know him by reputation. I've never met Mark, but
he's great.
It's amazing what he and his team have done over the last few years. I have a question for him as a chef. I believe his title is culinary director, and it's a question that I enjoy asking chefs from time to time, which is if he could have been a part of any restaurant team, past or present, which team would that have been, and during what period? And I think it's kind of a fun one to think about. You know, would you have wanted to be there in the kitchen with El Bulli during the prime time, or would you have rather have been a part of I don't know, Gramsci Tavern in the first few years here, or is there a restaurant out there in the world right now that he's particularly excited about that he wished that in a different life he could sort of jump in and get involved with that team?
It's such a terrific question. It's thanks. Like a restaurateur's spin on the question, like, who would you want to dine with, you know, living or dead or something. But I've never heard that before.
Yeah. Well, now I'm curious to hear your answer to that question.
Oh, I don't know.
Can I put you on the spot?
Oh, I feel like I have to give it some thought. But, you know, when you mentioned El Bulli, and I never dined there.
Right.
So I wish I had dined there, and I think that would probably be pretty fascinating to be in that kitchen.
Yeah.
So there's my answer.
Okay, good.
I would want to work there and have a meal.
sounds good.
Yeah. But I've been to Tickets in Barcelona, his brother's restaurant, and I had one of the most fabulous solo dining experiences there. So
great.
Shout out to them. Okay, that's the show.
Well, thanks so much.
Thank you. Congratulations on your whole career and starting in-house
and
whatever is to come.
Good. I look forward to getting you involved as a culture ambassador.
Great. I'm so excited. We'll talk more about it now. Okay, so my guest today has been Benji Leibowitz. He's the founder of In-House, a membership club for people who care about restaurants. Their website is inhousenewyork.com. You can follow them on social media at Benji Leibowitz and at In-House New York. You can follow me at Sherry Bayer, Bayer PR, and All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry, and websites are BayerPublicRelations.com and SherryBayer.com. All of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. And also, you can subscribe to my show, and also send me an email if you're interested in sponsoring my show. I am looking for sponsors. And my email is Sherry@SherryBayer.com. Thanks to my engineer today, Matt, and thanks again to Benji and his publicist, Laura. I'm Sherry Bayer. I'll be back next week with another live show. I hope you will tune in then. And thank you for being part of All in the Industry. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.